You're about to hear NPR's On Science. I'm Christopher Joyce from the NPR Science Desk.
And I'm Joe Palca, also from the Science Desk.
This being the last official week of summer, we're going to keep it simple, nothing too taxing. Three stories about critters.
First, we're going to listen to an interview that simply had to be done once it got out that someone had found the rotten remains of Sasquatch.
A.K.A. Bigfoot.
It wasn't really Sasquatch, but Scott Simon is our NPR host asking the questions, and he'll explain.
Another week, another Bigfoot hoax. Frozen body bought from two men in Georgia who claimed they'd come across a deceased Bigfoot turned out to be just a rubber gorilla suit with a few animal guts hanging out. By now, missing link academics have had a bit of experience sifting through hoaxes. So we have decided to turn to a scientist who studies such bipedal hijinks. Jeffrey Meldrum is a professor of anatomy and biological sciences at Idaho State University. His latest book is Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. You refer to it as an interesting and mysterious phenomenon, which seems to leave open the question as to whether or not it's real.
Well, of course, I'm not advocating the existence of Sasquatch. I'm saying there is a growing body of evidence that strongly suggests that there may in fact be an animal out there. I think it's irresponsible of the scientific community to just turn their nose up at this because of its past association as a tabloid subject.
What is the evidence?
The body of evidence that has the greatest impact on me, given my expertise, is the footprint evidence. And I don't mean somebody with crude carved wooden feet strapped to their boots tromping around in the mud. I mean tracks such as those that I examined back in 1996, a long line of tracks that were very animated, that showed all the signs of a living foot, tension cracks, pressure ridges, drag-ins, drag-outs, movements of the toes. I mean, I'm not saying that it's impossible to hoax, but to do it in a manner that I witnessed would have taken a great deal of sophistication.
I've heard it said over the years that they've never found, how do I put this nicely, a Bigfoot deposit.
I mean, we don't. There wasn't a little label attached to it saying this was left by Sasquatch, but nevertheless there have been enigmatic scats, we call them, that are in volume and diameter far in excess of known wildlife. We haven't had a good sample that we could glean DNA from, but that would be an important step.
Professor Meldrum, in this day, you've got Google Maps of the entire world, you've got drones, you've got infrared lenses. Why is it not possible to find a creature like this if he actually exists?
Well, people think that there's a silver bullet like a drone or an infrared camera or a thermal imager. They don't realize the density and the extent of the wilderness out here, particularly here in the western United States. The canopy of a coniferous forest doesn't allow a heat signature to penetrate, despite all the movies you may have seen. It's not a matter of, well, if the government just turned a satellite to look for it, we'd be able to pick it out. I don't think that could be accomplished.
Jeffrey Meldrum, professor of anatomy and biological studies at Idaho State. His latest book is Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. May all your scat discoveries be pleasant.
Try not to step in it.
Oof.
Ferocious.
You know, it reminds me of the ivory-billed woodpecker. I don't think they're ever going to be able to prove this. Remember with
well,
the woodpecker?
Wait a minute. The ivory-billed woodpecker, you're saying that you think that Sasquatch is real and the ivory-billed woodpecker is just as real, or one's not real?
No, I'm saying they're never going to prove this guy exists or not because they had the same problem with the ivory-billed woodpecker. People thought for years they saw it and nobody believed them. And then they said, hey, we've got a video, a 3-second video, and most everybody believed they found it. And then they started to look at the video and say, you know, it's not enough, and it just never is enough. They're going to have to find...
They're going to have to chain one to a rock and come over and take a video of it, you know, and you'll have to say, so what have you been doing all of my life?
It's going to have to be on CSI before they're ever going to believe it.
Probably. Okay, so from Sasquatch, which may or may not exist, to something that definitely exists, cows. This is a story about scientific serendipity. Looking for one thing and finding something else completely unexpected.
And also neat things you can do with Google Earth.
Hey, Nick Burda didn't set out to study cows. He's a biologist at the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany who studies small underground creatures called naked mole rats. They're blind, but have a kind of magnetic compass. They always build sleeping nests in the southern side of their little homes. Berta wondered if sleeping humans might do something similar. So he decided to look at camping tents and fired up Google Earth on his computer to get an overhead view of campgrounds. Tents were hard to see, but looking around on Google Earth, he realized he could see cows, lots and lots of cows. So he decided to see if they were affected by Earth's magnetic field.
We just stopped looking on camping people and started to look on cows.
Over 8,000 cows from pastures all around the world. The results appear in this week's issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. They show that cows tend to face either magnetic north or south when grazing or resting.
Most of them actually align in north-south direction.
Regardless of where the sun was or how the wind blew. Now, Berta told one friend about these results, a hunter, who said, well, why don't you also look at deer beds, these oval hollows in the snow the deer make when they're sleeping. And again, they found a north-south orientation.
It's a very clever use of Google Earth, and the evidence is quite compelling.
Richard Holland is a biologist with the University of Leeds in the United Kingdom.
It does seem that these animals are detecting the Earth's magnetic field and using it to point in the north-south direction.
Holland says there's one way to confirm that this is really happening.
The next step is to start going out and putting magnets on the heads of cows and horses and deer and anything to see how that affects them. That's one of the more traditional ways of testing if they have a magnetic sense.
If they really do have an internal compass, the magnet would mess it up. Now, some birds use magnetic compasses for navigation, and bats do too. But Holland says it's not clear what cows or deer would get out of it. He says it may just be a leftover from their ancestors' ancient wanderings. Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.
You know, there's a lot of things in nature that seem to be vestigial. I worked for a while doing sleep research, and someone suggested that sleep was actually a vestige of a time when we used to hibernate, because it wasn't like we needed to sleep anymore. We could just lie down and rest, but somehow hibernation had evolved, and we were stuck with it, and so we turned it into sleep. It's just one of those things that, you know, you think, why did it evolve that way? Well, it just did, and we sort of were stuck with it. So maybe that's why cows are facing north, because humans are sleeping.
Well,
actually, stretch.
Joe, the only thing I care about is why some cows face south. I mean, what are they trying to say?
Yeah, it's probably something to learn there. Okay, our final story is about the smell of fear. No, not about sharks. But it does involve fish and mice. Reported by my colleague, Christopher Joyce.
I made him include this one.
The organ in question is a tiny bundle of cells near the tip of a mouse's nose. Scientists at the University of Lausanne first thought it might detect the smell of a mother's nipples. It didn't. Then they got to thinking about pheromones, those strange biochemicals that animals, insects, and even plants use as a form of chemical communication, and in particular, alarm pheromones.
Basically, they are produced by stressed animals, like, for example, an animal is injured or scared.
Marie-Christine Broillet is a biologist at the university. She wondered if that bundle of cells might detect alarm pheromones. So her team collected air samples from cages where older laboratory mice were being euthanized. When they exposed a live mouse to that air, the neurons in that bundle of cells started to fire, and the mouse's behavior changed.
It would just go to the opposite end of the cage and freeze.
Freezing is a common fear response in many animals. They try not to be noticed. In another experiment, Broillet's team surgically removed the detection cells from mice. Then the pheromone didn't scare them at all, and they were still able to find a buried Oreo cookie, so their overall sense of smell was not affected. One other type of animal that definitely uses this kind of alarm pheromone is fish. It's secreted from their skin when a fish is attacked by a bigger fish. Scientists haven't identified that chemical either, but they can get salmon to drop to the bottom of a tank and lie motionless just by putting some ground-up salmon skin in the water. Nathaniel Scholes is a zoologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, where he's done that very experiment. He worries that humans may be preventing fish from smelling danger.
We're focused on this area because there's a lot of different pollutants that run off terrestrial landscapes and stormwater and get into fish habitats. And because the nose is directly exposed to the surrounding environment, water pollution can effectively interfere with the normal functioning of the nose.
Scholes has found that one pollutant in urban runoff, copper, prevents fish from smelling the alarm pheromone. Young salmon exposed to copper in a tank did not react, and an adult cutthroat trout, a predator, quickly picked them off. Scholes says alarm pheromones may be helpful to a species. One animal may get eaten, but others, perhaps the animal's relatives, in fact, get away. It's clear so far that fish, insects, plants, and now mammals use alarm pheromones to help them avoid danger. Marie-Christine Broyer says there's no reason to think humans would be different.
You get scared or you panic or you feel the fear from other people without seeing anything. So it might be that exactly you're able to sense this alarm pheromones. Maybe we produce alarm pheromones too.
The research appears in this week's issue of the journal Science. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
I really like the way you ended that story. The journal Science, you say.
And I can end this podcast. Thank you very much. That concludes our podcast. I hope you liked it, and we'll be back.
So do you think cows are happier when they're facing north or south?
We'll get to that next time.
Final word?
Why can't we just all get along?
All right.
Okay.
Okay.